Welcome to the Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of the Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Greetings, Saints, and welcome to the Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour. We are broadcasting live from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is February 4th, 2020. Most just don't realize it, but we are in that time of the end, and that's the time before Messiah's glorious return. So it's time to get out of sin, the world, and look to the holy city. Look to the one who suffered and died for you. Hear the sound of the shofar, heed the warning. Get right now before it's too late. Please make this choice for Yeshua tonight. If you need help after the program, simple. Call me. I'll pray for you or with you. If you get the machine, leave your name, number, prayer request, and or message. Phone number, 620-878-4682. In an emergency, cell phone, text me first, 316-619-4886. Now, you can always find updates with the breaking news all about the Wichita Mission Church radio program archives, contact information, just about everything you need to know about us at prophecyhour.com. Now, we are a national satellite radio program, which is simulcast live on the net internationally, on YouTube, podcasts, and some FM, so pray about supporting airtime. We are free, so let's stay that way. On another note, I want to thank our listener base that's in worldwide places like Sydney, Australia, Hyderabad, India, Westminster, London, United Kingdom, and of course the United States, such as Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Oakland, California, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This week, Wichita, you are still the largest group of listeners at our radio programs when they podcast later tonight, but you're followed real closely, by Houston, Texas, and Seattle, Washington. By the way, folks, if you have a mind to send us an email or a text, the email is radio@messiahsbranch.org or text me to my phone, 316-619-4886. Let us know what city you're hailing from. And maybe even how you listen to the program, we'd kind of like to know. Anyway, follow us and share us at Twitter. That's Pastor Dan Catlin at Branch77. Now prayer, and we'll bring on tonight's guest and get into this. I think we're going to have a really good, fast-moving program for you tonight. Your Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name, I pray. Father, I pray radio tonight goes according to your will, not our will, and give everyone out there ears in which to hear and understand the truth. So please, Father Yahweh, in your Son, Yeshua HaMashiach's mighty name, bless this program tonight. Amen and amen. Well, tonight I'm going to have Frank stepping on with us. As you all know, that he has a, he is the founder of American Voice Radio. He does his own programs, of course, which is called The Frank Report. He's also the producer of this program. He's the one that brings us in, brings us out, and all that stuff. But tonight, we're going to talk about a subject. I don't know really what direction we're going to go about it. It's kind of focused through these two articles. Now, since the start of the pandemic, you know, I did further research. Yes, I still believe it came out of the Wuhan laboratory and all that. I'm still kind of, but what I have found out about it, it was actually absolutely owned by Bill Gates. In fact, Bill Gates turned it over to Wuhan to have it worked on over there because of the fact that really a virus isn't supposed to be copyrighted, and there's a lot more to that. But a three-court judge in Peru ruled that COVID-19 pandemic was started by Bill Gates, George Soros, and Rockefeller. Well, let's throw this else on top of it, and something I'm really angry with, and we'll probably start this off with, is that Biden just took $50 billion away from farmers that Trump put aside for COVID relief. Now, I've seen some farm people really upset and angry about it. It took $50 billion away from them. Now, that could even crash their farm. And if they do, who's going to buy it up? Somebody will. Well, it'll probably Bill Gates, because, you know, Bill Gates has quietly made himself the largest owner of farmland in the United States. For a man obsessed with monopoly control, the opportunity to also dominate food production must seem irresistible. That's ludicrous. And sorry.
I am.
What do you think about that? I mean, both of those are something, but I'm really, this farmland thing, Bill Gates supplying our food, what are we going to be, peons working in his field? Back to you.
Well, peons working in his field and eating crap food that's poison. You think he's going to be growing, organic food on his farmland? I don't think so. I think he's going to be growing genetically modified monster food.
Yeah, I agree. That is really but that's a reality. You're not just poking around. That's really Bill Gates, right?
Well, it is. And the thing is, though, okay, look, I hate Bill Gates. I really do, because I look at his face and I see nothing but evil. And I see evil even in his wife's face. They're the same. They're, like, identical. They really are one, you know? So, hey, yeah. on that point, good job, Gates, because, you know, that's how marriage ought to be. But the thing is, I see him as evil. I see Soros as evil. I see Bezos as evil. The thing is, though, we can hate on these guys with good reason, but if we're going to identify the true enemy, it isn't them.
Really?
Because these men, evil men as they may be, they run businesses, okay? They don't, I didn't elect them, you didn't elect them, you didn't say, well, gee, I want Bill to be my representative. I want, you know, hey, I think Bill's got it going on, so whatever he says, he represents me. Nobody did that for these guys. They are running businesses, and the natural progression of any business is monopoly. It's just the way it is. This is why the United States Congress, sometime back in a galaxy far, far away, wrote laws called antitrust laws. These laws were to regulate so monopolies could not happen. Because monopolies obviously are bad for competition. They are bad for the free market. But that is the natural course of any business, is to grow and own everything. Because,
well, Frank,
you know, I mean, but so who do we blame here? And I want to get to that, because identifying our enemy is very important. It is those dirtbags that we say are our representatives who are supposed to be enforcing the antitrust laws, and they are not. And that's why we're where we are.
Okay, let me throw something in, and then you can go right on. I want to see your opinion on it, of course, and I respect it. I just want to throw in there real quick. I remember antitrust, the first time I came across that, was when they broke up Ma Bell. They actually did the right thing with that, didn't they?
Yeah, and they basically came up with these antitrust laws. You know, they eventually broke up Ma Bell, but they made them specifically for Rockefeller, okay? Because what Rockefeller did was he said, hey, you know, we're going to do oil. Because, see, at that time, Henry Ford designed his automobiles to run on vegetable oil. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know.
Well,
that.
He did. That the original Fords were, they ran on vegetable oil. The thing is, Rockefeller's digging holes in the ground, coming up with crude oil.
Right.
So Rockefeller had more juice, because what he did was, he's got these wells out in Texas and Oklahoma, because at the time that's where they were, and Pennsylvania. Okay, Pennsylvania pumped out a lot of crude, you know, back in the day. Quaker State Oil,
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's Pennsylvania.
In Quaker State, I get it.
Pennzoil? This is Pennsylvania, okay? So,
all about it. Wow, I just got educated. Go ahead.
What he did was, he said, okay, we got these oil wells going, and we're transporting the oil to the refineries that were on the East Coast, mostly.
Right.
Mostly in New Jersey, actually. And thing is, he's like, well, you know what? I'm sick of paying these railroads to transport my oil. So he bought the railroads. So now he has the oil wells. He has the way to get his oil transported. He owns that, too. So the next thing he did was buy all the, you know, start building gas stations, which he owned them straight out, too. Do you see the monopoly?
Yeah.
Nobody could compete with Rockefeller because they all had to pay to have their oil transported, and he didn't because he owned the railroad. And if you wanted to transport oil out, say you were Dan Catlin's oil company in Pennsylvania, right? You got a little oil company, and it's enough to make your family well off, right? But what you got to do, you got to actually go to Rockefeller, your competitor, to get your oil transported to the refineries. Do you see the power and control Rockefeller had over the whole market? So they recognize this is unhealthy, okay, for the economy. This is unhealthy for growth. This is not good. This is monopoly. And so they came up with the antitrust laws, okay? They strengthened them, and they enforced them on him, and they broke up Standard Oil.
Right.
Long before they broke up Ma Bell. But now, what do we have? We got Bill Gates. We got these guys. And what they've done is they've learned to do the shell game. They create a corporation, then they create a subsidy of that corporation, and a subsidy of that subsidy, and a subsidy, you get the picture. And they just do this. And they create a monopoly, but they go, oh, but it's not a monopoly because, well, that's Bob's Bingo Hall, and that's Ed's, but they own all of them. See, if you own Bob's Bingo Hall and Ed's Bingo Hall and, you know, Sally's Bingo Hall, and everybody thinks, well, you know, that's Sally's and that's Ed's, and but you actually own them, and Bob and Sally and Ed only run them. That's a monopoly on bingo in that town. You see, this is not healthy for competition because then you can say it costs this much to come in and play bingo. Well, if you want to play bingo in that town, that's what you're going to pay. There is no other bingo hall. You see what I'm saying? It's like in the Soviet Union where they said, sure, we're having a... Oh, wait a minute. Did I say Soviet Union? I meant America. Where they say, sure, you can have an election. You can vote for Communist 1 or Communist 2. See, in Russia, they actually gave you a bunch of communists to vote for, and they didn't really care which one got in there because they were just, you know, bodies, like Joe Biden, you know, just a body standing there. He doesn't have any mind or anything. You know, somebody has to tell him what to say. You know, and that this is, gosh, it's so obvious, and it's been going on a long time, but the enemy is, okay, so you're sitting at home one time, and you know, you live in a fairly bad neighborhood. So what you decided to do is go get yourself a big, mean dog, guard dog, right? And you feed the dog food, and, you know, it lives out there, and it, you know, barks when people come by. Well, all right, so you've got a robber that comes by and decides, well, I'm going to rob that house, but I don't want to get bit by the dog. So I'm going to throw a steak over there for that dog. Well, the dog's eating a steak, and in comes the robber and robs your house. Whose fault is it? See, because robbers rob. That's what they do. Snakes, you know, bite you. What can you do? That's what they are. You really can't look at somebody and go, man, I hate you because you are you. Well, really, if you're dumb. If you think a snake is anything but a snake, okay, and if you think a robber is going to do anything but rob you, you know, you're really not thinking, right?
Right.
But where's that dog that you've been feeding and supposed to be your watchdog? It's laying over there on its back, you know, on its back because it just got fed steak and it's all full. That's the situation we're in. These politicians are that guard dog. Okay? And they're not doing their job.
I get it.
Matter of fact, they're not only not doing their job, they're helping the robber rob your house because they want some more of that steak.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Let me say something. Absolutely. I get it. And that's just what I was telling my wife, but just in a different thing. You know, there ain't no good. All these guys are up there. There's something now, mainly in the House, I think, there's some people up there that are trying to fight. Those are freshmen, you know what I'm saying? And maybe there's some long-term people that might be there.
Well,
but,
I like Matt Gaetz. I don't know what you think of him.
Let me throw the rest of this in. There is a few people, I believe, that go to Washington that are actually trying. But most of them are 99% or whatever are corrupted once they get there because they're beating the stake in their instance is money. They're being made rich. How else do these guys on such a short salary, you know, come out, millionaires in a short period of time? It's because they're being fed that steak, and so that's what it's all about. That's a very good way to put it, the dog and the steak. But, yeah, they're being fed money. They're being rich. In fact, folks, I don't know if you know about it, but when these guys go up there, they usually take all their family up there, and they set them up as lobbyists and everything, and their whole family gets rich.
Well, all you really got to do is, you know, and all this is reported. And go back and look and see, okay, what was your net worth when you entered, you know, when you got elected? You know, the day after you got elected, what was your net worth? Okay, now that you've been there a couple of terms, what's your net worth now? I'll tell you what, if that net worth is more than what their salary is, they should be put in prison.
Yeah.
Because you know what? I mean... How does the, okay, say you're a, oh, I don't know, some high-ranking guy. Because, you know, these people, we got to consider people in the House of Representatives at least fairly high-ranking, right? I mean, in society, right? They're not the bum living under the bridge, okay? So they're higher up than that. And so they're up there. They're on TV and all this stuff, right? We consider them important.
Right.
Well... And they get paid pretty darn good, too. Now, let me ask you, when you're at a job and you're in a, let's even just say mid-level management, okay? How would your boss feel about knowing that when you leave your shift where you're working, you go to work for his competitor as a medium-level manager there? Do you think that'd be okay with them?
No,
it wouldn't, because you see, there's things they're doing that they don't want their competitors to know about.
Right.
They call it moonlighting, and it is, all the rules are gone now, but it was always frowned upon, you know? Now, you could moonlight with a completely different thing, like a lot of guys, you know, they're a plumber during the day, and maybe they moonlight as a bouncer at the bar, right?
Right.
Well, those are not related, okay?
Right.
You know, and nobody's got anything against anything like that. Somebody wants to make a little extra money, but, you know, you're not, just like you're not allowed to go to McDonald's and buy you some stuff and then walk into Burger King and go eat it.
Yeah.
Okay, they're going to look at you funny if you do that. They might even tell you to get out. Go back to McDonald's. You know, they might say that. But that's what's happening to us. We are paying these people enormous amounts of money, giving them enormous privileges, enormous benefit packages, and they're betraying us. And they're doing it so obviously. I mean, come on, look at the Republican Party. Forget about the Democrats. We know they're bad. We know they're possessed with Satan. But the thing is, look at the Republicans. You know, the dog that's supposed to be watching out for us?
Right.
50% of that stinking party are communists. And I don't mean the rank and file, you know, out on the street. I mean the leadership. 50% of the leadership is communist. Like the head of the Republican Party, Ronna Mitt Romney. That woman, you know, unbelievable. She stabbed Trump in the back and then had the nerve the next day to send out an email begging for money.
Yeah.
They got no shame.
That's right. McConnell, now he's got all kinds of ties to the Communist Party.
Yeah, like his wife.
but yeah, and at one point wasn't all those things that they're doing illegal? I mean, isn't it somewhere in the books that's? I know they won't. It's like everybody says, oh, we need to get it. Let's do term limits. Well, really, who's going to pass term limits? They're really going to do something to themselves. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and you know, look, you know, you want to know how they changed it? How they, when you're saying, well, you know, this used to be illegal? Well, yeah, but do you know how they changed it?
They're in charge.
They didn't make another law and say, like, for instance, you know, it says in the Constitution, bribery is not, that's unlawful. So they said, well, gosh, bribery is unlawful, but, well, it doesn't say anything about, well, let's call it lobbying.
Yeah.
So they changed the name. Now it's okay.
Yeah.
That's what they did. You see why definitions are very important? Because, you know, it...
With history, they change history and they change definitions. And believe me, I firsthand know about the definition things. I got a shock like when I got a brand new concordance somebody gave me and I gave my old one away that I loved, you know. And I got in there, and it wasn't adding up. Then the court says, wait a minute, that wasn't what it said. And so, hey, man, I've got a lot of older encyclopedias and books that are actually books, you know, not the computer. In fact, I even noticed it on the computer, you know, they did that. When I first started using the computer, it was easier to find real definitions.
Yep.
Now it's all garbage.
Yep. I only go to a few places. You can't even trust Merriam-Webster anymore. Okay,
no.
They just canned the standard. Because what they did was they took one of these stupid terms they use now and they made it, oh, well, we changed the definition. So one of the politicians said something, and so they changed the definition. Now, the rule on a definition has always been, well, in my lifetime anyway, that if a term is in common usage for 7 years, then it can get in the dictionary. Not 7 months, but 7 years. And they just forgot about that.
But I got a producer over there that'll scream at me if I don't go to a break in a few seconds. Tell them where they can, what time they can find the Frank Report.
Well, on ABRN.TV at 2 p.m. Pacific, Monday through Friday.
All right. Well, let's go to break, and we'll come back and talk some more, folks, in about 4 minutes.
Pastor Dan will be right back.
Fire on the mountain, Moses went to see. The bush was burning with the flame by the power of God's glory, standing on holy ground. Yeah, he had to humble down. Take his sandals off as he was standing on holy ground. Daniel in the lion's den, he trusted in God's word. Those hungry lions' mouths were shut, and not a hair on Daniel was hurt, and he was standing on holy ground. Yeah, he had to humble down. He was standing on holy ground. Oh, ground, holy ground, they were standing on Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, into the furnace they were tossed. When the king looked in, there were four, not three, but they had their sandals off and they were standing on holy ground. Yeah, they had to humble down. They were standing, standing on holy ground. David told Goliath, you come with sword and shield, but I am the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel. He's standing on holy ground. Yeah, he had to humble down, but he was standing, standing on holy ground. Holy ground, holy ground. They were standing, standing on holy ground. Are you standing?
Venerable Bede was an Anglo-Saxon theologian who lived in the late 7th and early 8th century. He devoted himself to the study of Scripture at a very young age, learning Greek, Hebrew, and Latin. The writings of Bede provide important information as to the traditions of Easter in the Anglo-Saxon Church. In 664 AD, the Synod of Whitby was held in the Kingdom of Northumbria. The principal discussion of the Synod was centered around the question as to the timing of the celebration of Easter. Should it be reckoned according to Celtic tradition or by Roman tradition? The decision of the Synod was in favor of Rome, which brought England more in line with the Roman Church in Europe. Bede attempted to defend from a theological standpoint the decision of the Synod to replace the Celtic reckoning of Easter with that of the Romans. He tells us that the heathen Anglo-Saxons called the fourth month Easter month after their goddess Eostre. Bede says that Easter was one of the most important spring festivals among pre-Christian Germanic people, and that it was dedicated to the goddess Ostara or Eostre, whose name suggests east, and thus dawn and morning light. Bede records that the name of the festival was transferred to the celebration of Christ's resurrection when Anglo-Saxon and German heathens converted to Christianity. Scriptures warn that the name of pagan gods are not even to be spoken, yet each year in traditional Christian churches around the world, the name of a pagan fertility goddess is proclaimed with honor. I'm Richard Reeves with Just the Facts. For more information, contact Partakers Publications, Post Office Box 23031, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28227, or visit our website at www.toolong.com.
Back. This is Pastor Dan Catlin. You're listening to Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour on the American Voice Radio Network. We're into a really good conversation with Frank Stephan, who does the Frank Report and is the founder of American Voice Radio. But first, let me follow up with the commercial you just heard. Folks, we really need you to support us so we can care for the people that the Father sent us to the Wichita Mission Church, men, women, and children from all walks of life who had a bad break and come to us for help. As a mission church, it's like a home. We're like a home church with a building. We get no help from any government agency. It's only folks like you that supported us that we're now in our, actually, we're in our 21st year. We're getting ready to start our 22nd year in June 1st. So we minister to people in a part of town that most people don't even like to drive through. And yeah, we're right out there at front. We've been beating all the way through this. I'm not going to use the word pandemic, this, whatever you want to call it. We've been out there feeding right on the front lines. We've also been giving clothing and other things. We've been doing first aid. and all kinds of things that we normally do. We've just been doing it outside. Many, many Bibles, we can't keep Bibles. And we really, the people are desperate right now. They want some large print King James Version Bibles. And make sure you check those, because a lot of them say large print and they're not very big. Why do I say large print? Because most of these people don't even have reading glasses. Give them something they can read, not just sit on a shelf. Anyway, we are the last hope for so many, and we are responsible to care one for another, as we are our brother's keepers. All donations, every donation, no matter what size, helps. And the Father notices all donations that come from where? Your heart, of course. If you don't wish to help with the poor, consider a donation for radio airtime. I know you enjoy it, and you learn from our guests, radio isn't free, and donations keep us on the air. You know, we do have to be even beyond airtime, paying for, after it's on radio, then it goes to a podcast site. We have to pay for that. All of those things, electricity, internet, all of it, that has to be paid. So you can donate online or mail a check or money order or give a donation over the phone. And you can find all that information at prophecyhour.com, prophecyhour.com. And so now we're back with Frank, and I know he's still there because, hey, radio's still working.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's still a big question mark with me, and it will be until after I have somebody else on. You know what I'm saying? Because right now it's always ABR in my house, but when it's only happened when it's been ABR, my house, and somebody else. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's true, but you know, you have sounded real good. No problems at all today. So that's something anyway.
Well, yeah, and praise the Father, I agree with you. I think we are actually sounding better since I put this new board in and reloaded some software. But I got some new equipment coming next.
Well, what happens with the boards, just so everybody knows, they actually do just sit there and go bad, okay? They really do because, okay, understand how, okay, you know those little, and I'm not basically telling you, Dan, I'm telling everybody out there, so they know what is happening here, that Dan's just not saying, well, these are going bad. What are you doing to them, Dan? Are you doing something bad to them? No. They go bad because every one of those knobs you see that you turn, you know, turn left or right, well, inside, they're greased up with this, you know, it's an electrical grease that conducts, you know, it works for electrical stuff. But like any grease, and I believe they're using cheaper and cheaper everything, including grease, what happens inside there is it dries up, okay? And that grease is to give a smooth conductivity while you turn the dial. Well, when it dries up, what happens? You start hearing crackling, you start hearing this, and you end up with dead spots. And the dead spots grow as it dries up. And that's what happens, okay? And you can't, these new knobs, the inside, you can't, well, I suppose you could somehow, but back in the day, they used to be made that you could take them apart and re-grease them up and they'd be basically refurbished. But now, you know, now everything's just throw it away and put a new one in. And that's the answer. So that's why boards go bad, folks. They really do just sit there and go bad. You could keep it in your closet and have it go bad, although if you keep it in a plastic bag that it comes in, chances are less that it will go bad, and that's why they put them in plastic bags, folks.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, we are living in a throwaway society. I mean, look at the marriages nowadays. For the most part, so many of them are throwaway marriages. You know, a person's been married three, five times, or, you know.
Well, I ask myself because oh man, I liked it so much I'm going to put it on the website. There's this thing I found on YouTube. It's a, I think, 3 or 4 part series about Rome. And you know, but I'm not going into that. That's my why I brought it up is because, you know, you can go to Italy right now and you can go to Rome and you can still see the better part of the Colosseum. And you can go all through Rome and find remnants of their civilization, their buildings, their monuments, their stuff, their roads are still there. Now, I ask myself, in 1,000 years, what's going to be left of this empire? Nothing. Maybe the Hoover Dam, but not much else.
Right.
Not much else, because we don't build anything to last. We are a throwaway, disposable civilization.
Right.
You know, everybody talks about the Mayans. Oh, the Mayans are gone. They, you know, what happened to them? What happened to them? Well, probably the same thing happened to them that happened to Rome is going to happen to us. They just collapsed. And all that's left of the Mayans are these, you know, these pyramids they built. Everything else is gone. It's like, well, gee, this is it. What's the deal? Only one of the, you know, they only got these left? Where did they live? What did they do? Well, what if they built all their houses out of wood? You wouldn't even find a remnant of those. Okay?
Right. Well, that's a good point. You're at a real good point. What is happening to our society? I mean, let's go with this. Since Biden came in, you know, there's so many people who are still living in the fantasy that Donald Trump is going to go come save them, you know. And, man, I wish that would be true. But they're not even dealing with the reality. They're saying that the military's in charge. You know, why all these... 40-some different, executive orders are taking over everything. But my point is I don't think there's a way to turn this back. You know what I'm saying? Do you think this is could be turned back? I mean, anything's possible. But really, where do you think we're at right now? We just sent for persecution? If so, how long are we going to get to stay on here or back to you?
Well, the thing is, it's like, well, I don't know. You know, because it's... I watched this as a refresher course, because I actually sat in a library, well, actually several libraries, because they all had this book, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire.
Right.
It's a real thick book. It's like, you know, real thick. But, you know,
well,
so I went, you know, as I got into towns, I always went to the library because it's a good place to hang out, and they had books there. So, and they let me read them, unlike, you know, the supermarkets that used to always come by and tell me that it isn't a library. So I figured, well, I'll go to the library then. You know, and I just read what I could and then move on to another town. When I got there, I'd go get that same book and continue where I was, you know. And this was kind of, the Cliff Notes, okay? This was the Cliff Notes in video on that. But I noticed something. I didn't recall it. It was brought to my attention that, you know, Rome actually fell only after 300 years of being, because the Gauls, while the Roman legions were out of town fighting foreign wars, the Gauls came down and sacked Rome, burned it to the ground.
Right.
And then, of course, the legions came back and drove them out, but Rome was still burnt to the ground. And that's when Rome decided to build walls around its city, okay, after that. And that's what we know of the Roman Empire. But you see, Rome fell right then and there. But they came back, okay? They came back. And they were 300 years old when they did this. We are just about 300 years old now, okay? You know, not the United States of America, but with the colonies. You know, when the colonies, I'm counting from the colonies, because really that's when the United States of America started.
Sure it is.
You know, I mean, you know, it's just like Rome wasn't really Rome from the very beginning, but when Romulus and Remus, you know, Romulus killed Remus, and he made Rome then. Oh, that story's very interesting. You know, there was two hills in Rome. Two good places for a city, right?
Right.
And Romulus wanted to build it where Rome is, and Remus wanted to build it across from there, right? And like brothers do, they wouldn't compromise, and so they decided to fight. Well, back then, brothers or anybody decided to fight, it was a fight to the death, okay? So Romulus kills Remus, and that's how Rome got there. And then he figured, well, we need to populate. You know, if I'm going to build a city, I got to have people. Well, how do we get people to come here? There's no city yet. I know what we'll do. We'll go. I'll get my drunken buddies over here, and we'll all saddle up, and we'll go, I don't know, to the next town somewhere, and we'll kidnap all the women. And that's what they did. They kidnapped all the women, brought them back to Rome. And then when the guys came, well, of course, the guys are going to come try to rescue their women, right?
Right.
Well, when they got there, they captured him. And they told him, well, now you live in Rome. And this is what, you know, what they actually did. Because everything took longer back in those days. You know, now you go into a town, steal all the women, they'll probably be by your place in a couple of days, right?
Or sooner.
Yeah, back then it took longer, okay? It took weeks and months, right, for them to saddle up an army to say, let's go get our women. Well, by then, all their women were pregnant. And when they got there, their own women told them, please, don't attack them, you know, because we don't want to have these children die. We're pregnant, you know?
Right.
You know, back when women used to not want to kill their babies.
Right. Well,
so,
that's a...
Yeah, that was a long time ago. But the thing is, the men said, what? Yeah. Come on, let's just, you know, it's not so bad here. These aren't such bad guys. Because they weren't really treated that badly. I mean, they weren't actually, they had it pretty good. But the thing was, you know, the bad thing was they were kidnapped and raped.
Right.
But after the kidnapping and rape, they were treated fairly well. Actually, good for the day, right? We wouldn't think it's very good now, but it was actually good then. When the men showed up, that's what they told them. Look, we're pregnant. We don't want these children to die, and we got pretty good here. Maybe, you know, why don't you think about staying here? You know, I mean, it's not that bad. You can get a job and blah, blah, blah. And that's what they did. So Rome was built by robbers and thieves and rapists.
Right.
You know, and this country's got a lot in common with Rome, let me tell you.
I know about Rome, too, and part of what led to their downfall was the fact that, you know, they got to their morality really, really got bad, and so that's what made the nation fall apart.
Well, that's it's true. It is true, and internal corruption is basically what has taken down every government, and the Bible speaks to that. That it's not the enemy out there. It's the enemy within.
Right, and that's what's going on right here. Look, and that's the thing, that the biggest thing, and I call it the revealing. When Donald Trump was running for president, but actually when he took office, it seemed like everybody dropped their personas and masks, that you could see people for what they really are. You know, they're just bland and evil, talking about killing and murder and the way they trash talk and everything. It's just like, wow, how did we get here? Do you agree or disagree?
Well, yeah, it's insane. But they're communists. That's the part that nobody gets, because they keep calling themselves Democrats. Okay, you got a few that are being a little honest, but they know you're too ignorant to know what they're actually saying when they call themselves Social Democrats. Do you know who else was a Social Democrat? Because he said that he was himself. When they called him a communist, he told them, actually, I'm a Social Democrat.
Talking about Hitler.
I'm talking about Leon Trotsky.
Well, who's Leon Trotsky?
Leon Trotsky was the man who won the Russian Revolution.
Oh, and really?
We wouldn't have communism if it wasn't for Leon Trotsky, who Lenin later, well, actually Stalin had him killed by an interesting form of assassination. He hired an axe murderer to kill him. Because Stalin was a sweetheart, you know, Uncle Joe. And now we have Uncle Joe 2.0. So this is great. No, Leon Trotsky, see, okay, so you get Marx and you get Lenin. Lenin, oh, by the way, you know, Lenin and Marx and Trotsky and Stalin, none of them, that was not their names, okay? None of that was their names. And the reason they changed it to what they changed it to was because they were actually upper-class Germans, okay? Communism was born in Germany, okay? It wasn't a Russian thing. All those so-called Russians like Lenin, they were Germans. Trotsky was a German. They all came from rich families, and they were educated and lived in Germany. Trotsky was there, and Lenin was there, and they started this revolution, because the people were really, the Tsar really was treating them badly, okay? They were justified in overthrowing him, not really killing his whole family, I don't think, but they were that mad.
Right.
And they had good reason to be mad. But now, okay, so they do this and they kill the family, but there's still the Russian army, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they call it the White Army. You had the White Army and the Red Army.
Okay.
And the White Army was loyal to the Tsar and the ideals of, you know, monarchy. The Red Army, obviously, were the communists. Now, the communists, see, Lenin was against having, just kind of like today, okay, and like Stalin did. You know, communists always appoint the most incompetent people to jobs, because incompetent people that don't know how to do their job can be easily controlled. And that's the whole game behind communism, is control. And that's what they do. And that's what Lenin was doing. And they were losing their behinds to the White Army, because none of these rabble-rousers were professional military people. They didn't know how to fight a war. They didn't know how to do any of this. They knew how to throw rocks and yell and scream and get drunk. They didn't know how to do that. So they were losing. And they were losing badly. Now, the Tsar was dead, but the White Army was going to win. But what Leon Trotsky did was, because there were some colonels and generals that left the White Army because they did not support the Tsar or monarchy, okay? So they just quit. When the Tsar's dead, I quit. You know, that's it. They went off. Lenin would not hire them. Right? Trotsky, on the other hand, went and hired them. He appointed them to the Red Army, because Leon Trotsky and Lenin basically were running the communist revolution in together. They were like co-murderers. And Trotsky got these generals that were White Army generals, and he folded them into the Red Army. And then the Red Army started winning, because, you see, the Red Army had a lot more people.
Mm-hmm.
They outnumbered the White Army like 3-1. But they were still losing badly because they were disorganized and they didn't know how to fight a war. And the White Army did.
Once
Trotsky got these guys in there against Lenin's wishes. But, of course, success is the best way to shut anybody up. And that's what Trotsky did with Lenin. He put these guys in there, and then the Red Army started winning. So Lenin didn't have a whole lot to say until they won. And then Trotsky was murdered by his own because he went against what they wanted. They don't care if you win it for them or not. It's control. You must do what I say, even if it gets me killed.
Right.
And that's how insane they are. And that's what happened. So without Leon Trotsky, there would have been no communist movement. All right? There was, because he was really a smart guy, and he was a master organizer. And for his trouble, he got killed by an axe murderer at the end. But, you know, that's communism. That's what happened. So Leon Trotsky, he was the one who said, when they said, well, you know, what is this communism, blah, 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 he goes, actually, I'm a social democrat. Yeah.
Right. Let me throw this in real quick, so the people can get it before we run out of time. Folks, if you haven't read the Communist Manifesto, you need to Google it and look it up, because if you read what their goals were for America, you'll find out that it looks like, I don't know, I think it looks like all of them have succeeded, but they tell you how they were going to destroy America, and that's what they've been doing. In fact, it was read into the Federal Register in 1963, so it's even in the Federal Register, so we've known about it all this time, but everybody just goes ho-hum and on. Have you ever
knew about it. New York bankers financed it. That's where the money for the Red Russian Revolution came from, was New York City. Honestly, that's where it came from. These guys have been traitors a long, long time. Because, see, communism is about control. And, look, these businessmen, their goal is monopoly. Okay? It really is. It should be any businessman. I mean, if you're going to say, I'm a businessman, I'm not just a man in business, I'm a businessman. Well, businessmen, you got to have in your head that monopoly is your goal. Okay? I mean, why are you playing if the goal isn't to own everything at the end? You know, that's business. That's monopoly. Everybody's played monopoly, right? I mean, the goal is to own everything. And it's true. And that's communism. And that's why you sit here and you go, wow, I'm confused. Because I was for a while, and it's like, wow, I'm confused. You know, I mean, we got Republicans here, and they're supposed to be pro-business, pro-this, pro-that, and pro-making money, and it seems like all the billionaires funding our destruction are all communists. How's that work? Where are the billionaire conservatives? Well, there ain't any, because they're all communists. And, you know what, I think to get $1 billion, you kind of love money, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think, you know, everybody who's driving a Mercedes or lives in a mansion is in love with money. But, I mean, if you've got $50 billion, I got to think you really do love money. And the Lord says the love of money is the root of all evil. So we're seeing that because, look at Bill Gates. Okay, let's just presume he has a love of money, right? We'll just presume that.
Right.
And, look what he's done. He created software that the NSA can spy on everything we do. Now he's bought all the farmland so he can poison us and make us slaves. He's developing a vaccination so he can sterilize most of the planet. Gee, I don't know. Bible seems kind of true to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree. I believe that he does love money, and I do believe that he's just evil. You know, you can tell by his intentions, by the way he looks, that's absolute. You know?
Oh, by the way, I wanted to mention this, sorry. You were talking about the Communist Manifesto. Well, after my show tonight, I can tell you, I'll do it specifically tonight, but I do it randomly. I have the audio version of the Communist Manifesto. It takes the guy like an hour and 21 minutes to read the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I play it at 9 o'clock at night. Pacific time tonight. I play it.
Okay, that's and you're what time
Pacific.
Are you at? At 7, right?
Well, it's six. It's going to be 6 o'clock and 5 minutes here.
Right. Yeah, because you're 2 hours different.
So in three hours, I'll be playing that, and you can listen to the whole Communist Manifesto, not just the 10 planks. This is the whole long. This is what Marx. Okay, here it is. Boom, the whole plan. Not just the 10. The 10 planks are in there, but there's much more. There's an hour and 21 minutes to read.
You got to listen to all of it or read all of it, not just the 10 planks. The 10 planks that leave you, you know, it ain't as impressive as the other, and I'm calling it impressive. Yeah, it is, because everybody's ignored it. I'm going like, what are you idiots? And I've been talking about it as long as I've been talking
Me
on
Me too. And others. And you know what? I found out about it from others that were talking before I ever knew anything.
Right.
You know,
right.
So people have been trying. And I'm sorry, but America as a whole, I'm sorry, it's over.
Yeah.
Turn out the lights, man. You know.
That's what I'm trying to get people to realize is where we're at and to be prepared for the persecution. But I believe this had to come. Because it's called tribulation, and we get that before Messiah returns. But I'm going to have to get out of here in a minute, Frank. So tell the folks goodbye, and I'm sure we'll talk again.
AVRN.TV, 2 p.m. Pacific Time is my show. And just remember, folks, the Lord wants us on our knees crying out for Him, okay? He wants that. And... We haven't done it voluntarily, so he's going to help us along, I think.
that's the way it works, Frank. He really wants us to need him and not, well, we can do it all ourselves, so we have no need of him. All right, you be blessed, Frank. I'm going to let you go. Bye-bye. Okay, folks, remember, there is only one true God. He is your Father. He is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His Son is Yeshua HaMashiach, and he gave our life for our repentant sins. And he rose after 3 days and three nights on the heart of the earth. And through him, and only through him, is the way to the Father. Remember, always, always, always be a blessing to others. Pray about supporting the Wichita Ministry and Church, or just pray about supporting my Messiah's Branch. Lord our God, Father King Universe, ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's name, Father, that you would please bless and keep them, and that your face would shine upon them, and that you would be gracious to them, and that you would give them peace like no one or nothing else can. Till next Thursday, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time from Messiah's Branch.